Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplex and the art house. What's new on video and streaming, and you might also hear about some dead people we like.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Anyway, this is Film Sociology, where you'll find out what's the next cinematic marvel.
It was unbelievable!
And what's just a movie.
Shut up! My God, you have no freaking life!
Okay, here's your host and my dad, Matthew Soucy.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soucy. This show is available on iTunes and, like all of the podcasts here at WFYI, available on Spotify. Well, friends, it's Easter weekend, so, happy Easter, no matter how you celebrate or who you celebrate with. Hopefully you get to watch some good movies that are new, or at least new to you, as well as falling back on old favorites. Next week's show, just going to give you a heads up, next week's show is during Pledge Drive. So I'm hoping anybody who has contributed to the Grab a Pencil portion of Film Sociology, make a contribution. Go to WFYI.org/give and show your support for Film Sociology as well as all things public radio goodness. And just to give you a heads up for next week's post on Facebook and Twitter, I'm going to allow the listeners, the readers, the folks who contribute to Grab a Pencil, I'll answer a movie question. So if you have a question to ask, you want to ask me, you can post it, and I'll answer it the best way I can. Or not. We'll just have to see how this goes. There's a few video titles that I'll get to in a little bit. And we'll grab a pencil in a little while. Because we have not one, but two special guests on this week's program. And we'll get to what I've been watching recently. But I'm still, Everything Everywhere All at Once is still in my head. It's been over a week. I've watched several films since then, mostly at home, but this film is still in my head, so I hope you get a chance to go check out something truly original, something very emotional, and something that kind of rattles your senses and is the first excellent film of 2022, just saying. So, yeah, it's still out there. And it's interesting because my podcast world is kind of mixing and matching and intersecting and intertwining. Because I mentioned on last week's show, Ke Huy Quan, who plays Michelle Yeoh's husband in this and is best known for my generation for playing Short Round in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. He was also in the Goonies. And, of course, I've been listening to Golden Globus Theater for a while. Check out those guys. They're fun. Podcasters up from Michigan. They do canon films and canon-related films, sort of. So for Easter, I have to tell you, this week's film, they covered 2025, The World Enslaved Via Virus. This is one of those independent Christian films, if you're into that stuff. But the real title was the film they did the week before, Viva Knievel, the one and only starring vehicle for, Daredevil Evil Knievel, or as I called it, The Passion of the Knievel, because he jumped motorcycle jumps for your sins. Never forget that. So, check out Golden Globus Theater. But what's been funny is once I catch up on the new episode, I go back and catch up on the old episodes that I missed, and they did a series of Golden Globus Theater did a series of what they call terrible twos, bad sequels to great films, and disappointing sequels to great films. And in this series, they did Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom and just eviscerated Short Round, the young actor. But I remember hearing an interview with the actor about Everything Everywhere All at Once and the fact that actors of Asian descent today thank him for opening the door and kind of clearing the path, making the path for their availability in film and television. So something to be said about that. And I also caught up on, there's a thing they do called Tippy Taps, which are television shows, which are usually shorter discussion, usually shorter discussions than the film discussions they have. And my buddy Taffeta V, who's going to be one of the guests on this week's show, I got to hear her and the boys talk about the Paul Lynde Hollywood or Halloween special from 1976, which had a bunch of ABC TV stars and Kiss. And man, it's something to experience. So anyway, check out Golan Globus Theater. It's all over the place, and they're fun. They're fun men. They are fun men. I've done one episode with them. I did a Miami Vice episode about which had Ted Nugent, and here's hoping I get to do some more with them later on. And we'll get to Taffeta in a little bit. All right, the films I got to watch at home from Film Movement. There is a really good looking and an interesting film called Servants, and this covers a monastery in Czechoslovakia in 1980 and what happens when the government wants the church to starts preaching their good word. So, and it follows two young students, seminary students, and what they're going through as this is going on. Gorgeously shot in black and white. Great use of camera work. One of the favorite things is seeing these gentlemen in their long robes playing soccer outside and doing things out in the yard, vacuuming and everything, especially with cameras coming from the roof and looking down, almost like a mosaic. So, or looking down the center of a staircase, or filming up from the center of a showcase. So I like to think of this film not as a whodunit, but a who is it. And what happens when the priests are ordained with or without state approval? So, when was this made? What is this film set in? Anyway, so look for Servants on Film Movement video. From Welgo USA is an action film called Spirit Walker, and we have a gentleman who is shot in Korea, the aftermath of a car crash, and a gentleman has amnesia or short-term memory loss. It's like if you, and then along the way putting his identity together, it's like if you mix Groundhog Day and Memento with a lot of fights, a lot of fist fights, and a lot of gunplay. And it wore me out after a while, I have to say. So this is one of those pay attention films, which is fine. But it's also in one singular tone, even with the fights and the gunplay. So, Spirit Walker from Welgo USA, and probably the best of the lot is Oranges and Sunshine from Cohen Media. This is a 2010 drama, stars Emily Watson and Hugo Weaving, and I don't know if it got an actual U.S. release. I'm sure it hit a few art films, art houses along the way. But Emily Watson plays a Nottingham social worker in the 1980s, and she finds out about some English orphans who were sent to work camps in Australia and basically used as child labor. And as time goes on, she finds out more and more that there's more of these kids, and so much so that her own job lets her do this full time. So a lot of trips between going back and forth between England and Australia. And we get to hear some of their stories. This is back in the 1940s and 50s, where the government sent children over in the thousands. And not just orphans, children that were removed from the parents. So what helps in this film, good performances by Watson and Weaving, and it's more about helping the adults get their story and get their identity back. More about trying to take down the government, trying to take down bureaucracy. There's a few moments. There's a wonderful moment where they're at a seminary, and the priests know what's going on, and Emily Watson knows what's going on. So and there's also one where she's with a board of directors, and they're gonna contribute money and give a and do anything to CYA. But it's more about connecting with the kids, with the adults, I should say, who had the traumatizing childhoods. And you think it, I think a more melodramatic American film, you would have Watson's family wondering when she's coming home. She's spending more time with these people than with her actual family. It doesn't go down that path, fortunately. She forms some odd friendships, bonds with some of the adults along the way. As we find out later, there was 130,000 deported kids, and 23 years after the fact, the countries of Great Britain and Australia officially apologized. And in 2010, the Prime Minister of England made a public apology. So, doesn't go into TV melodrama, doesn't get self-righteous, and doesn't see Emily Watson's character as a godlike figure, just a woman doing her job. And it's a and there's even a low-key tell-off scene for one particular priest. So it could have been very, very earnest. Unfortunately, it is low-key in a good way. So look for Oranges and Sunshine from Cohen Media. It's now out there. Because it was National Siblings Day, I revisited the Ulu Gosberg film Georgia, which is one of my favorite films about siblings. Yes, I have a few. You Can Count on Me is also on that list as well. But it's this is the one with Jennifer Jason Leigh and Mare Winningham back in 1995. Jennifer Jason Leigh's mother did the screenplay. And it's about two musician sisters. Mare Winningham is a successful one. Sarah McLachlan, Bonnie Raitt, any of that kind of aspect. And Mare Winningham got a supporting actress nomination for it, and rightly so. And a really good performance also from Jennifer Jason Leigh. She is the younger, self-destructive one, is louder, does more rock, does more punk, and seeing their paths cross. And watching it again, I am reminded, and anybody who has siblings, you know this, there really isn't no good sibling and bad sibling. On paper, we see, Jennifer Jason Leigh is supposed to be the bad one, but has redeeming qualities. And we know that Mare Winningham's character is supposed to be the good one, but she lets her guard down in several cases. It's just a great character study and two fine, fine performances from these actresses. Ted Levine is also in this in a non-psychotic role because this is a few years after Silence of the Lambs, and he just kept getting similar offers for roles like that, playing Mare Winningham's husband. You get to see young John C. Reilly in this as a strung-out drummer. But anyway, it's Ulu Gosberg, and look for it. I don't know if it's streaming. I own a physical copy of it, and I'm damn glad that I did. So that was for Siblings Day. And then I finally got to revisit Murder by Decree, and I'm going to talk about the show, a film a little more, hopefully with my buddy Patty Glenn, who says this is her favorite Sherlock Holmes film. This is the film with Christopher Plummer as Sherlock Holmes, James Mason as Dr. Watson. It was directed by Bob Clark, who had already made Black Christmas, and this is years before he made Porky's and A Christmas Story. So we'll get to Murder by Decree, hopefully in the next couple of weeks. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Before we get to our special guests, over at IU Cinema on Friday, if you're listening to this early, Friday, April 15th at 7 o'clock as a part of the In Light Film Festival, the 2018 drama Donbass. On Saturday, April 16th, the 2019 documentary Collective. Saturday at 7 p.m. Tuesday, April 19th at 7 p.m., the 2020 documentary 499. There will be a post-screening Q&A after that. Wednesday, April 20th at 4:15, the big story, the George Taliaferro documentary from 2021. Thursday the 21st is sold out. Good for you. Tuesday, April 26th, recently added at 7 o'clock, the 2021 documentary Eat Your Catfish. Filmmakers Adam Eisenberg and Noah Amir Arjamand, are scheduled to be present for a post-screening Q&A moderated by IU Professor Emerita Kathleen Gilbert. That is Tuesday, April 26th. Thursday, April 28th, Milking and Scratching, the handmade films of Naomi Unman. That's 7 o'clock on Thursday, the 28th, as a part of the Underground Film Series. And then Friday, April 29th, at 7 o'clock, the 1952 comedy Has Anybody Seen My Gal? All of that happening over at IU Cinema. Over at the Can this weekend, as I mentioned, everything, everywhere, all at once. Go check that out. They're also showing Inland Empire, and there's now a Bruce Willis retrospect. Of course, we know he is now retired, and people are talking less about the last decade of films he's done. So they're showing Death Becomes Her and Pulp Fiction. That is running through April 20th. And I believe on Saturday they are showing Scott Pilgrim versus the World. So all of that is happening at the Can-Can. At the Historic Art Craft Theater in Franklin, Friday night, 7:30 p.m., The Shawshank Redemption as a part of the Stephen King Film Festival. Saturday, April 16th at 2 p.m., The Running Man. Saturday, April 16th at 5 p.m., Misery. Saturday at 7:30 p.m. on April 16th, Carrie. And then Friday and Saturday, April 22nd and 23rd, 2 and 7:30 p.m., The Blues Brothers at the Historic Art Craft Theater in Franklin. Oh, and Friday, April 29th at 7:30 p.m., a Real Women Vintage Wine event, 10 Things I Hate About You, all at the Historic Art Craft Theater in Franklin. I mentioned Golden Globus Theater, of course, so go check those guys out as well. Now, with that in mind, I am happy to say this gentleman, I've had him on before, but never this time of year. So here is a little epic chat with Danny Boom. Enjoy. Friends, I am happy to announce it is a film sociology Easter miracle. No, not that miracle. We've had him on for Thanksgiving. We've had him on for Christmas. But now making his Easter debut, my favorite Red Wing, or my favorite Maple Leaf, and yours, Danny Boom. How you doing, buddy?
I'm all right, buddy. You nearly screwed that intro up completely there, Matt. Don't ever say the Red Wing thing to me.
Well, only if your lovely wife is on the phone. By the way, congratulations on your team making the playoffs.
Well, hey, buddy. You know what I mean? Greatness only comes once a year. If we can make the first round, at least it'd be better.
So, I guess, Danny, let's start with, so what's been happening since we last had you on the show?
Oh, boy. It's been nuts. I've been, now, where did we leave off? So, last time I spoke to you, we were in the middle of COVID. We were and everything. And then life's been very, very good because I actually opened, live shopping became a big thing, and a lot of people reached out to me during COVID to say, hey, could you help me sell stuff on digitally? So I've managed to build my own studio, and we're doing lots of shows for Wayfair now, and a company in Canada called Showcase, and it's been really, really, really interesting, you know, change of events, really, because, like, normally I do cooking constantly, but it's all been lots of different things, and that's where the world's going now, to retail. So we've managed to build our production company and our studio for there, and then the cooking school did amazing.
Yay!
Gastronauts Academy has been growing and growing, and this September we'll be offering our first intake of international interns. So what we do is we have a six-week intensive course on everything hospitality. And then we whisk people off to the Swiss Alps for a month, where they do an intensive internship in hotels and bars and wineries and breweries. And they learn everything to do with food and drink and chocolate and cheese. And then they come back with a little bit more on their resume than they had before. And they can make the decision if they want to go into the industry or if they've just had an amazing, fulfilled life experience. So that's what we're really excited about.
Excellent. Excellent. You can... Oh, and we have a cameo. All right.
Yeah, she's here. My daughter, Novely, is she's not going down for her nap. So
that's okay. Look.
I know. I'm telling Matthew about Easter. Yeah.
Hey, listen.
Hang on. Say hi.
Hi.
Hi, sweetheart. How are you?
Say hi.
Hi.
Hello. How are you, my lady?
Good.
And we got lots of chocolate? Yeah, we're going to have lots of chocolate, right? We're watching Paw Patrol while we're doing the interview.
Ah, very good. That's good. That's going to be one of the questions I was going to ask.
Yeah, actually, we'll jump straight into this because this is the first, the biggest movie of the year for me. It's the Paw Patrol movie by Nickelodeon. So,
and how many times have you watched it?
I don't know. This is a crazy thing about kids' movies, right?
Yep.
It doesn't matter when it was out or what happened. Yes, go on, keep going. The craziest thing is that they can watch it and watch it and watch it and watch it, and until yep. the tape literally explodes off the reel, if we did have that these days. I just realized how old I sound like.
That's all right.
Until the DVD scratches. No, until it's the cloud is crashed. So we've watched, I think, Minions, must be a million times.
Oh, my gosh. Okay.
Paw Patrol movie. We've got Hotel Transylvania. It was huge. all these great – and I've got to say, though, to be honest, I enjoy the kids more than the kids. So it's been because I've got that stupid sense of humor as well. But it's really, really cool how they have evolved, like, the show. I think I say this every time I'm on. It evolved so I can be entertained as well as
yeah.
the kids. Yeah.
Well, there are aspects of it, especially sometimes they do little inside bits for the adults for the parents watching. But there's also that thing, if you watch it enough, if it's a well made film, you'll still notice new things after watching it two dozen times.
And there's a funny thing with Megan. Like I guess I sit and watch the movie, mm-hmm. but she's because I guess mums are always about, right. They're always flitting here, there, and there, and dads are entertaining the kids, I guess. So Meg always says to me, she says, I've never seen this bit. I said, babe, we've been watching this bit for 5 years. And in 5 years, you've only just noticed the ending was that. And she's like, well, now it makes sense. But yeah, it makes sense, right? I got to say that the best movie that we watched, best kids movie we watched this year was Turning Red, Disney's Turning Red.
Oh, yes, yes.
And I've got to tell you now, I'm sorry, it's not Goodfellas. But the amazing thing was is how they crafted in a girl turning of age,
yep.
and made it like very, very like, let's make it normal, and also let's take away the stigma, but also let's put it into character.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was the greatest thing I've ever watched in my life. And my 5-year-old and my 8-year-old didn't get it. But,
no.
But the whole thing is me and Meg turned around to each other and went,
Uh-huh, yep.
Well played, Disney. Well
yeah.
played. Yeah.
Because Megan's going to be, I'm going to guess, Megan's going to be in charge of the talk, and you'll be over there. Or else you just put the movie in when the time comes. So.
Yeah, yeah. Well, as you know, Matthew, I'm not allowed to do anything. So,
I'm gonna word this carefully. When the talk happened at our house, I waited a few minutes and then went into her room and said, "Look, I know I'm not your first choice. I'm not my first choice, but I'm gonna help you anyway." So that's just
funny.
I think that's vague enough for everybody. So
yeah.
So yeah. Now were you guys able to watch Encanto as a family?
Oh God. Well done. Let's not talk about Bruno. Come on. and then the other thing, the other
Miranda.
His name. Yeah, thank you. It's just it just literally rolls off the tongue.
Yep.
Vivo was another good one.
Yes.
That he wrote or did. And the music in both those movies is just fantastic. And what I found was funny, though, is it's two Disney movies, and one was Luca.
Yep.
And they both were talking about Bruno. Get the Bruno out of your head and don't talk about Bruno. So like, I wonder if did you think he would have like, hey guys, you're stealing a pitch there. But don't worry, But I gotta say, they were really good feel good movies, and the messaging's so strong.
Yep.
And I love that they're female lead characters. They're female. It's taking the ladies and they're putting them into the forefront and literally dissecting emotion and really making you aware of what the burdens of some family members have and what insecurities other members have. And then the other thing is sometimes you're just completely oblivious.
Yep. So
it takes a movie to break that down for you. And it's not a Jordan Patterson. Jordan Peterson comes on and does a lecture, and you're like, uh-huh, I get that. That's the man side of things. But now it takes Disney movies to break down, like, how a man should look at how a woman's feeling. And I make that from the early ages through. I think it is absolutely brilliantly done. I really do.
It's getting better. And, we just walked 3 feet behind, like, sitcom husband. Cause,
yes.
Yep.
On the red carpet. That's what
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
All right.
The greatest thing I've ever been told,
yes.
This is the truth, you know why men wear tuxedos and women dress up on the red carpet?
Why is
it's
that?
Because men are not supposed to be seen. We're not supposed to be seen, nor heard. We're just sitting in the background. We've done a couple of red carpets, and believe me, it's all... If you've ever seen my wife, folks,
she'll walk out,
no matter what. So it's like... when she steps on into the room, it's always "Hello, Mrs. Boone," and I'm just in the background. And
Megan's husband, you're not a name, you're a title.
Yeah, and actually, it's on one of my Emmys. It was Megan's husband. Yeah,
it's a Jane Austen world, and we're just the dad.
Yeah, exactly.
Can you think of the last film you and Megan were able to watch together when everybody was down at once? Fingers crossed.
Right. I'm going to sound really terrible now because we're into junk movies.
Yeah.
So we watched the Ryan Reynolds, The Rock. What was that movie?
Oh, the one with Gal Gadot.
It was Red. It was like Project Red or something.
Yeah.
Like on Netflix. We've watched a lot of things actually. It's kind of funny because Netflix has now upped its game in the movies,
mm-hmm.
and I tell you, so we watch a lot. Like we'll probably, but we then the great thing is you can watch it like a book.
Yep.
So even though it's not a series, like we've watched many series, but we're actually picking up a lot of movies, and there's and the Ryan Reynolds. Oh yeah, Project Adam. That was the best movie that we watched, and I cried like nobody's business at the end of it because unfortunately I lost my dad 2 years ago. And it was that amazing meta moment that you could go back or go forward. And
yep.
That just blew me away. How it was so well done. So the Project Adam was probably the best movie that we've watched lately.
All right. Very good. Okay. So Easter is coming up. You're listening, of course, to Film Sociology with my buddy Danny Boom. We are talking Easter miracles. What is there an Easter dish staple in your household?
I'm a big lamb guy for Easter.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I do. It's a Dijon. I do a Dijon mustard mashed potato.
Oh God!
Straight away, and then that is top. Then we basically create what they do a Basque lamb. Now in the Basque region of Spain, what they do is they. It's kind of funny because one of the weirdest things I've ever seen. They freeze red wine, and so. What they do is if they freeze the red wine, which brings out the berries, and they drink it like Kool-Aid. But the coolest thing is when they make their lamb, they take the frozen red wine, they place the lamb into marinade with the garlic and the rosemary. Then they throw in a cup of brown sugar and then a cup of balsamic vinegar.
Mm-hmm.
And they let that just sit. And what happens is it just takes on a different flavor. And then what you do is you throw it in with some green beans, some tomatoes. You put the lamb on top, and then you tent it with some foil, and then you let it like cook for slow and low for about four or five hours. And then what happens is the steam, and literally when you open it up, the lamb just falls off the bone. It's amazing.
Wow. I want a clarification. You say frozen red wine, but it's not to be confused with ice wine, right?
No. They literally take a bottle of red wine, pop it in the freezer, and leave it for 24 hours. And because basically it's a summer drink.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd never seen that anywhere before. And I was traveling through Europe, and it was like, out of all the things I've ever seen and everything, I thought that was the most odd thing, that you freeze the red wine. But then when I thought about it, it's like, well, you put white wine in the freezer or the fridge to chill
right.
it. So why wouldn't you do it red? But you just don't think about red wine in that sense.
No,
you think of it always open in the
Always at room temp, yeah.
Yep, yeah. But it's a completely different thing, different flavor, and it's a lot richer, very fruity. And I've got to say, it was one of the best things. So that's part of the recipe. Put it in the fridge or the freezer for 24 hours, let it chill down, and then place it into your roasting pan, and what we'll do is it'll be more of a berry flavor in pulling out of the lamb. And funny enough, why I love lamb is because it is the most unique tasting meat. That and duck
yep.
are completely unique in flavor. Like, I've had crocodile and thought it was chicken. You know,
so it, there is a there's an Indian place in my neck of the woods where they do a lamb vindaloo that I like very, very much. Yeah, I mean, it's very, very simple. What if you, as far as lamb, can you recommend some others that could be used as a substitute instead of ground beef or ground pork?
For a curry?
Anything. Oh, I mean, because I think lamb can be intimidating for some because of the price, and it's I say not as fat as, say, ground beef. Am I right there?
Yeah. I mean, you could, well, I would never use ground. This is off the bone.
Okay, all right.
So, I guess I'd take a shoulder or a leg of lamb, and then that's how we do it.
Okay.
But, I mean, I would say that it even worked really well with... I'm just trying to think, like a short rib.
Okay.
Would be great. Actually, really, really good with that. Because you wouldn't be too far away from a beef bourguignon or a short rib bourguignon.
Mm.
So, but you wouldn't make the slurry. What you're doing is you're letting all the juice do its work. Throw a little butter in it and then let the fat just create your sauce. It is. And then when you go over that mashed potato, poof,
yeah,
forget about it.
Yeah, I tend to do a smoked gouda and bacon mashed potato. But yours sounds very good as well. And I think also your lamb suggestion, so you can give ham a break. You can get that elsewhere for other time.
Yeah. I mean, we've always done ham's never ham's always a Christmas thing to me, but I always think chicken. A good roast chicken,
mm-hmm.
like whole thing, and then the lamb. The other thing is, have you ever thought about doing fish, like a branzino or a sea bass, with chili flakes and tomato and a little touch of lemon? Really give, and then some new potatoes and a touch of sauteed greens or something like that would be phenomenal.
Okay, I would say the one issue that I have, because I'm in Indiana. So as far as seafood, now you're closer to major bodies of water than I am. So, you know, let's call it what it is. So I'm stuck in Indiana. So do you have any Indiana seafood suggestions?
Well, they got Whole Foods in Indiana.
They
right?
do. They do. They
yeah,
do.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. Well, then, you know, the stranger thing is what the most exported thing that would be great entree is mussels.
Mm.
And do mussels in white wine with a little touch of cream. And then the beautiful thing is, I always find this is like, Easter's about sharing. It's about the indulgence. You've gone through Lent, if you have done it, and you're looking for that indulgent moment. And as you're gathering, and we've not been doing that for a lot lately, why don't we do something like fun? And you want the wow. So when the pot comes up, the lid comes off the pot, and you see the mussels, and you've got the cream and the white wine, and then maybe some scallions over the top, and then you can just sit there and soak it up with some bread. That is a great Easter Sunday like snack. That would be one of my other favorites.
Okay, very good. Danny, before we go, because I know you got a 2-year-old running around the house,
she's got a chainsaw right now. I don't know what she's going to do with it.
Well, you're not in Texas, so there'll be no massacre. It's okay. And remember, friends, go to DannyBoom.com for all the information. I have an assignment for you. You are, without giving away the full address, but you are in the greater Rochester area still, correct?
Yes, that's what we are, yeah.
Okay, I need you to look up a marker for me. This is with my other show, The Blues House Party. There's a new collection of recordings of the great blues artist Son House that just came out. And there is a marker of Son House at the intersection of Clarissa and Grieg Street.
Yes.
Do you happen to know where that is?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
Well, the next time you're in that neck of the woods and you can do a selfie with the marker, I will shamelessly plug you on The Blues House Party and Film Sociology, which I already do. So
awesome.
There you go.
Shamelessly, everybody. Definitely Academy. We're here for you. See you on Way Day. Why not? Let's go for it. Let's shamelessly put this out on NPR. I love this.
So, but the family's doing well. Megan's doing okay. She's licking her wounds with the Red Wings like I am.
She's more like keeping us all in place, really.
Yeah.
She's been, I've got to say, Megan, through COVID and everything, has been a complete rock because we've been balancing work and the kids and everything, and she works from home, and as I say, she's been the, you know, she is the rock of the family.
Very good.
Absolutely. And I only just fill in and see what I can do to help.
Open.
Not make too much mess, not make too much noise, just, as you say, 3 feet behind and do it, do the best you can, son.
Open jars, kill bugs, and the occasional meal.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
All right, friends, Danny Boom, DannyBoom.com. Go check him out. Go support his stuff. He'll sell stuff to you. He'll buy stuff for you. And hopefully we'll get some photos of him with the Sun House marker. But, Danny, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show.
You too, my friend. Have a great Easter, everybody.
Always good to have Danny on the show. It's, you know, we were mentioning earlier, we talked off air. You know, we were supposed to have him on at Thanksgiving, and that didn't happen, and in Christmas, because life happens, work happens, and life and work changes happen. So always a good to have Danny on the show. Maybe I think a new goal is to have him on during a non-holiday season, but we'll see. All right. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. So I got one more interview to share with you before we get into the grab a pencil portion. And I've mentioned this before, and it's been a while. I love it when we get to the grab a pencil portion and either you, the listener, tell me, hey, I watched a movie because you, Matt, or somebody on Facebook or Twitter mentioned the film and I gave it a shot. That's why we do this. This is why we've been doing this since the COVID shutdown. So, and that's kind of cool to hear that somebody took a recommendation from you. So the other part is, as host, I see all these titles, and every now and then a title will come up and I'll say, hey, that's on my pile. Yes, I have a pile of physical copies of films that I haven't touched yet. Either I have never seen them before, or I have them, I've repurchased them. Yeah, I purchase Blu-ray over DVD sometimes with certain films or certain collections. And this happened again last week. So my buddy Taffeta V, who we're going to have on in a moment, had a wonderful rant on Twitter about the 1950 film noir Gun Crazy. And I had purchased this, gosh, back in December. The Warner Brothers Archives had put out four film noirs on one collection, Murder, My Sweet, The Setup, Out of the Past, and Gun Crazy. So it was just a great excuse. I saw that rant and then put the movie in that night and revisited Gun Crazy. So also a good excuse to have my buddy Taff on the show with an exclusive. She has an exclusive in this conversation. So here we go. Oh, and of course, I've known her long enough. She gets her own intro.
Moneypenny. What gives?
Me, given an ounce of encouragement. You never take me to dinner looking like this, James. You never take me to dinner, period.
I would, you know. Only Anne would have me court-martialed for illegal use of government property.
Flattery will get you nowhere, but don't stop trying.
I've never been to Istanbul.
You've never been to Istanbul?
No.
Where the moonlight on the Bosphorus is irresistible.
Maybe I should get you to take me there someday. I've tried everything else.
Darling Moneypenny, you know I never even look at another woman.
Oh, really, James?
Mm-hmm. Let me tell you the secret of the world.
Now, what do you know about gold, Moneypenny?
Oh, the only gold I know about is the kind you wear. You know, on the third finger of your left hand.
Hmm. Well, one of these days, we really must look into that.
Well, what about tonight? You come around for dinner, and I'll cook you a beautiful angel cake.
Well, nothing would give me greater pleasure, but unfortunately, I do have a business appointment.
That's the flimsiest excuse you've ever given me. Ah, well, some girls have all the luck. Who is she, James?
She is me, Miss Moneypenny.
And kindly omit the customary byplay with 007. He's dining with me, and
I don't want him to be late.
So there's hope for me yet.
Moneypenny, won't you ever believe me?
In you go, sir.
Thank you, ma'am.
Oh, by the way, how was the girl?
Which girl?
The Chinese one we fixed you up with.
Oh, another 5 minutes that I found out.
She'll never know what she missed.
Miss Moneypenny, give 007 the password we've agreed with Japanese SIS.
Yes, sir. We tried to think of something that you wouldn't forget.
Yes.
I love you. Repeat it, please, to make sure you get it.
Don't worry. I get it.
Your passport is quite in order.
Well, anyone seeing you in that outfit, Moneypenny, would most certainly be discouraged from leaving the country. What can I bring you back from Holland?
A diamond? In a ring?
Would you settle for a tulip?
Yes.
How are you, Moneypenny?
I am well. How are you, Mr. Soci?
Oh, better when I'm talking to you. You know that. We
I
now
do know that.
We now have something in common. You and I are very much alike, Mr. Bond. Because Taffeta and I, besides being buddies for years and years and years, we are now also at the beck and call of Golan Glowis Theater, which is a fun film podcast. You've done a couple of episodes. I got indoctrinated earlier this year with the Tippy Tap, which is their TV thing. How do you like those guys?
Oh, they're fun. They're super fun. And one of the great things was is my favorite one that I've done with them was one about the roller disco pajama party, the Playboy
disco pajama party. From Chips.
And I was all excited because I love Playboy, have a different podcast all about Playboy. And that seemed great. And I had not seen that before. And all of a sudden I'm confronted with the fact that, oh, the running gag through this is Dorothy Stratton. And
it got dark.
But they were terrific about sort of rallying from that.
I know, right? And I know it's going to be brought up on while we're name dropping podcasts. I know You Must Remember This is going to bring it up because they're doing one of your favorite subgenres in the video store, the erotic exotic thrillers of the 80s.
It truly is my favorite.
Yeah,
like, I could talk all day about Sea of Love.
Me too, but for different reasons. Maybe. Well, no. Okay, I'm going to word this carefully, gang. Star 80 is. If you know Bob Fosse's films, all of Bob Fosse's films have something in common. They are about the seedy underbelly of show business and or fame.
Yeah.
And Star 80 is, of the Bob Fosse films, by far the scuzziest. And the man got an Oscar for directing a musical about the rise of World War II in Nazi Germany.
Yeah, yeah. Eric Roberts was
terrifying.
Boy, oh boy, just so terrifying. So yeah, good stuff. Highly recommended.
Not a date film. In fact, one of the darkest Mystery Science Theater riffs is, "Hey, it's Eric Roberts' sex chair."
Oh God.
Yeah, I think that's enough of the Star 80 portion of the chat to begin with.
Yeah, I think we should move on, right?
It's hard.
Lighter, like Gun Crazy.
we'll get to let's get into Gun Crazy because and then we'll shamelessly plug the other podcast. So this is how this happened, friends. There is a stack of physical copies in my screening room because why wouldn't there be? And right. You know, there's stuff that I've purchased that I just haven't gotten around to because the show or podcast or, you know, what have you gets in the way. And there is a very cool 4 Blu-ray set of film noir from Warner Brothers, of which Gun Crazy is a part. And, you know, as a part of this show, you know, when we do the grab a pencil portion and you're telling me what you've watched recently and blah, 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 you know, every now and then somebody will tell me, hey, I watched something because you mentioned it. And it happens in the case of yours truly, where somebody will mention a film and I'm like, hey, I have that and I haven't watched it yet. Well, Taffeta, much to her credit, had a classic thread that just went bonkers on Twitter, and it was a great excuse for me to revisit Gun Crazy. Miss V, the floor is yours.
Gosh, I love this movie so much. I'm a fan of noir anyway,
yep.
Just sort of generally speaking as a genre. And Kel Surprise, I love a femme fatale, right?
Like, yes. Oh, yeah.
Obviously, that's where my heart is. And this one is so different than other noirs in general, and our anti-heroine is so different from other femme fatale. And this is a great movie if somebody is hesitant about watching older movies. if they have not seen a lot of noir, that kind of thing, if they're like, I don't like black and white movies, which happens sometimes, that's fine. But it's a great way in because this little sucker is less than 90 minutes long. And you get going right from the beginning, and it is just a hard and fast ride all the way through. It feels incredibly modern in technique and in what it's saying. It's fantastic. It's from 1950. The director was a man named Joseph H. Lewis, and this was a guy who had worked for over 30 years. Mm-hmm. He did everything. He ground out low-budget pictures in every genre, westerns and musicals, action movies, ghost stories. He did a ghost story with Bela Lugosi.
Nice.
Thrillers, all kinds of stuff. But now he's mostly remembered for this and a couple of other noirs that he did. Later in his life, he even did TV. He did a lot of westerns on TV, like Rifleman, yep. Bonanza, yep. Gunsmoke, that kind of thing. And I totally have a little fantasy in my head because this dude feels like he would have directed the stuff that Rick Dalton would have been in.
Ding, 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 ding. Yeah, for you fans of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I think his last major film was Terror in a Texas Town with everybody's favorite brunch date, Sterling Hayden.
Oh, wow. I have to check that one out. I've not seen that one.
Yep, that's 1958. And also, screenplay by Dalton Trumbo. Hands the ball back to Moneypenny.
Oh, wow, yeah. Well, so Gun Crazy was actually written by Dalton Trumbo, although not credited to Dalton Trumbo, because it's 1950. So he was blacklisted.
Yep.
The House Un-American Activities Committee said, nope, you can't work anymore. So this is credited to Millard Kaufman, but it's a Dalton Trumbo script. And it's based actually on a short story by someone named McKinley Cantor that had been published 10 years earlier. It's really great because it's tight, it's psychologically interesting, especially for the time, you know, because we're sort of still early on in thinking about some of these things about how the criminal mind works. So that's pretty great. Also, another podcast I just have to throw out
sure.
here is if you're interested at all in the Blacklist, House Un-American Activities Committee, Trumbo, any of that stuff, you got to go back and listen to the season that Karina Longworth did on You Must Remember This,
yep.
all about the Blacklist.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe 3-4 years ago now.
Yep.
But just truly excellent. You can burn through them in a day.
Mm-hmm.
They're so good. So, you know, we've got this real workhorse director, this really fantastic script, and it is a crime spree movie. It's super violent. We start in a traveling carnival.
For you fans of Nightmare Alley, there's that. It's not just
you know, I'm an old Connie myself, darling.
We know, dear.
Near and dear to my heart. It stars Peggy Cummins as Lori. She is incredibly beautiful, but she is a completely and totally different type of femme fatale in this. She is like I know I can't use naughty language
thank you.
On this one. No, I won't. But she is punk as heck.
Yes, I actually wrote in my notes punk AF because you wrote that
yeah.
on Twitter.
Yeah.
So thank you. Yeah, you can use the abbreviations, dear. It's all right.
Okay. she's really different. I think that normally when we think of a femme fatale in noir and neo-noir in just sort of general, you kind of have this image of a languid, you know, clever woman, very, very heavy on the femme, very sexy. And, you know, I always kind of have a a slow-moving, you know, thought-provoking kind of a woman in my head. We're thinking like
Same.
In Double Indemnity. We're thinking like Matty in Body Heat.
I was about to say Sky Point to William Hurt. I was gonna actually. Sorry, I'm. Yeah, I know he's gonna break. He always breaks your windows for you. But in this one, and I'm glad you brought up Body Heat because yeah, early when we meet the femme fatale, you know, sometimes it takes some time. For, especially if you've never seen noir, which I guess happens, of you know where you start to see the calculations in their plan, and with in the case of Peggy Cummins, you know her first scene she's got a gun, yeah. Right out of the gate. They're not we're not hiding, we're not eluding, we're not is she or isn't she? Yes,
no.
That's
you
right.
You know immediately. Not only is she, does she have a gun? She, I think she has two guns in that opening scene.
One for each of you. Yeah.
Yeah, and of course she's all tarted up in a very sparkly cowgirl outfit because this is a traveling carnival.
Yeah.
And also, the point of view of the camera, we are on our knees looking up at her as she turns around. We know immediately who's in control,
yep.
And who is calling all the shots in this. So she's really beautiful, but she's beautiful in a very different way. It's much, much more urgent. It's much more violent. There's nothing bubbling beneath the surface with her. It is all right out in the open. And her mark in this case is actually played by John Dahl, who I primarily know from Rope.
Yep.
And so the first time I saw Gun Crazy, I was shocked because in Rope, John Dahl is the top.
Yep.
He is the one calling all the shots in that. He is the one taking advantage of poor Farley Granger. And they are the murder boyfriends, but it's really all his idea.
Yep.
And in this case, he is so captivated by the character of Laurie. And
he's more sincere than tough, which is another contrast to the film noir tough, you know, the man who tends to think of themselves as a tough guy. Yes, even Fred McMurray in Double Indemnity. Sees himself as a bad mofo.
He was very, very pleased with himself. I mean, for an insurance guy. was very pleased with himself. Definitely thought that he knew what was going on and thought of himself as a tough guy. But not so John Dahl in this. He's a regular guy who might have a bit of darkness but is struggling. But he is just under the spell of Peggy Cummins. It starts right away, it does not stop the whole way through. One of the things that happens is they go on the run pretty quickly. It's all about a crime spree, very sort of Bonnie and Clyde. There are a lot of scenes in it that are driving. literally driving.
Yes.
You're in a car for a lot of it. She drives at least as much as he does, if not more.
Yep, that's a piece.
And also, there's something about it, and I'm not sure I can articulate it very well because, you know, it is a visual medium. But
yeah.
There is a sensibility about the way the driving scenes are shot that feels super modern to me, and it also underscores the urgency of what is happening. They feel more raw. So instead of being the kind of driving scenes that you saw a lot in movies of the era where you're just kind of seeing lights and a projection in the background, this is actually practical driving. And the camera is kind of just in the back seat, just watching them. And even their language, their dialogue in the scenes in the car when they're driving feels a little more unfiltered, a little more improvisational almost.
Right.
I mean, I don't know that it was, but it has that sense about it. So that's another thing that kind of separates it from other movies of the era and gives it this strange modern edge that I think is really exciting about it. And yeah. that's the whole thing, is it's very exciting. And another, you know, another sort of thing that comes up in Bonnie and Clyde much later is the beret that Faye Dunaway wears in Bonnie and Clyde is a nod to the beret that is worn by Lori in this.
Nice.
She wears a little black beret through most of the movie. The costumes for Gun Crazy were designed by Norma Koch. She was actually known for hagsploitation, which is something that you and I have discussed.
Always a favorite here at Film Sociology, yes.
I know, certainly a favorite for me. She did the costumes for Whatever Happened to Baby Jane and Hush, Hush, Sweet Child.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
And so she also did this. And this is another thing that separates the character of Lori from other femme fatale, in my mind anyway, because, you know, I'm always looking at the clothes.
Yep.
Is that when we traditionally think of a femme fatale, we can picture a lot of them in pure white, but we're definitely looking at clothing that is sexy, that is very feminine, that is very fashion forward. That is how we think of a femme fatale.
Yep.
That is what, you know, catches the eye of the men that are going to be sucked into her world, right?
Yep.
But the character of Lori, when she's not in her glammed up cowgirl look, which she is a lot in this, she's in tweeds. She's in sweaters. She's got a beret on her head. She's wearing an overcoat, like a trench coat, that kind of thing. There's even a pivotal scene in it where she shows up for a job that she's taken, a regular job in the straight world. And when she shows up, she's wearing trousers.
Yeah.
And this is quite scandalous.
Yes.
And she's immediately called out for it by the woman who's her boss. She's like, why are you wearing pants? And she claims that it's because her dry cleaning didn't come back in time. That's her little ruse about it. But this is just what she wears. It's a little more practical if you're on the run.
Yeah, that's right.
And so even the way she looks is very, very different than the other bad ladies in these kinds of movies. And the way she acts also is really different. She's turned on by the violence. And when we think of, again, other femmes fatales that we normally see in movies like this, she's totally different. A lot of the other ones, they're smart ladies, lots of clever machinations over time. They've really given a lot of thought to these things. It's usually for money, sometimes for power. Less frequently, it's for love. But not Lori. She is a dead-eyed psycho. She is turned on by the violence. There's no sort of undercurrent of playing the long game here. She's street smarts. It's all Carney style, rough manipulation. She's a tough girl. She's really chaotic. Everything is reactive instead of long-term planning. And she's really violent.
Yep. She wants a guy with spirit and guts, which was one of the lines that she has in the film. And I was going through my notes, and you mentioned earlier about Bonnie and Clyde. I wrote, he thinks it's Bonnie and Clyde. She knows it's film noir. So it's not going to bode well one way or another in this. But, yeah, for her, it's an adrenaline rush of doing all of this. And
all for the adrenaline, yeah.
So,
and he's just sort of going along.
Now, you mentioned the disguises. I want to know, there's a lot of cowboy garb. There's the great moment with movie glasses. It's like Lily James in the Dig, where you're like, you've never worn glasses in your life. He's got a military uniform. What other pairing disguises would you have for these two? I'm thinking, you know, baseball uniform and hot dog vendor. What else would work?
It's a Halloween.
No, it's a Halloween. That's not how this works. Okay.
No. But I do think that like they do get married early on, and basically a lot of this evolves because they've become married, they've burned up all his cash on a honeymoon, and now they got to figure out what to do, and she's like, we'll rob a bunch of places. I think that one of the things that if they had not been married, I think she would have been smart enough to have them wear rings.
Mm. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
yep.
Like she would be thinking of something like that. Just to sort of get by and be a little bit more unnoticed. But, the way they look is very different. Even when she's seen in the back half of the movie with a baby, which, they are a couple of seconds from kidnapping that kid, and she does not care. She is ready to do it. Not a maternal instinct in this lady at all, which I think is terrific because you don't see that a lot, and it's not only not a maternal instinct, it's almost what's the opposite of that? I don't know. She's antagonistic toward the children. I think that that's really interesting. She's not posing as a mother at any point in this. It's really kind of amazing. Another interesting thing I think is just in the script, in Trumbo's script, you know, psychology was still a young science at this time, right? Like, so it started to be really popularized, maybe 30s, 40s, that kind of thing. We're in 1950 here. So we're starting to think about those things. It's very different than it is now. But you're seeing shreds of it in this because the introduction of the John Dahl character, we get some flashbacks to his childhood. And, you know, they are two different kinds of gun crazy. They're both crazy about guns. But for him, it harkens back to a specific incident in his childhood where he was sort of imprinted upon, and we talk about that a little bit even later in life, the way he is acting around guns and his way of referring to them and being around them is deeply rooted in some you know psychological craziness.
Doesn't he say Smith and Wesson and then just drop the snow globe and die? Because if it's not one thing, it's your mother.
It really does feel like that. And so it's got those elements. And then for her, it's just this raw violence that she likes. And she talks about getting so afraid that killing is all she can do. It seems a little bit like she's turned on by it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Speaking of turning on, I wanted to mention, for those who are, and it's funny because I just revisited Touch of Evil. There's a three Blu-ray collection from Kino Lorber of the three versions of Touch of Evil. And of course, when you mention Touch of Evil, you talk about the long tracking shot at the beginning. Right. This Gun Crazy has its own version of it, and you mentioned how violent a film this is for 1950, and you know it's not Peckinpah, but the fact that you have a bank robbery that happens, what she does, and then the aftermath is pretty impressive. So if you're one of those single track fans, I am. This really should be on your list of, and that's pretty impressive for a 1950 low budget film.
You can see that this guy, the director, was able to work with economies of scale. You know, like it doesn't feel like a big budget for sure, but he really wrings out every possible moment and really kind of uses a lot that he does have at his disposal. And so, yeah, that kind of a long tracking shot, which, you know, everybody loves that. Although I have to say, you know my favorite long
which,
tracking.
Which one's that, dear?
The beginning of So I Married an Axe Murderer. right over the
yes.
ending credits.
Where she her in her outfit, she could have been in the audience, whether you mentioned with the beret or at a Mrs. Maisel concert. So
absolutely. And correct me if I'm wrong, but no kidding, isn't that coffee shop scene basically like the most accurate depiction of my life in the 90s? right?
Yes, that's exactly how it was at the certain place on the north side when misogynistic authors weren't doing book signings. See, here's the thing. I love the fact that I made reference to one guy. It could be several, but anyway.
Sadly, it could be several. Although, you know, there were also a lot of really glorious authors. And
yes.
Wonderful times.
Yes, there are.
Had,
we will eventually break into that. I know you're working on a project, but
I'm writing a book.
About?
I was asked to write a book about my life in the bookstores. that's not the craziest thing. I was approached to write about that real sweet spot in the 90s and early aughts, working as the events lady.
Yep.
In a large bookstore, Borders. We can actually say it.
Yes, you can
okay.
actually. You mean wait? Rhymes with hoarders.
Rhymes with hoarders. No, it's fine to say it. I'm sad that now when you look up Borders, basically all you see is, how did it fail? What was the reason for the end of Borders? Because we could have told you a long time ago what it was. But what I really am trying to do is remind people about the good days. And it's also a little bit of a defense of working in places that are maligned generally, flyover states and big box bookstores,
mm-hmm.
Because we actually made some really interesting things happen, and we had a lot of free reign to be very independent for a while, and it was quite glorious, and thank you for being a part of that.
And I was going to say, otherwise, we have this episode, so yes, of course, you helped me out very early in my career. I will never forget that. So when it's done, we're going to obviously have you back on, and then I'm going to have you list your favorite cinematic bookstores. Early homework on that. I want to get near to the end of Gun Crazy because there were a lot of smoking weeds. Not that smoking weeds, but smoking weeds climax with quite the foot chase in the California hills.
Yeah, we end up with a foot chase per in heels.
Oh, and and the meatpacking plant job, which you mentioned, the pants job, which. They actually found a location and used it, and that was pretty impressive.
That was impressive. The idea of sort of taking a straight job, at least as a fill-in while they were planning something else, I thought was pretty interesting. And generally, I feel like jobs that we see in movies of this era, particularly noir kinds of stuff, if it's a woman with a job, you know, we're looking at a secretary, a switchboard operator, a hat check girl, a cigarette girl, all the careers that I missed out on and would have been terrific at. Thank you very much.
Yes, dear.
I really would have. I would have excelled. In this case, we're doing some real, like, working class, hard labor stuff at a meatpacking plant. And I think that that's an interesting turn. And I think that it's also the most appropriate for particularly the character of Lori, who, again, is this kind of low-end femme fatale. She's a different type, and I really enjoyed that. And then we do have this foot chase.
I'm sorry, before that, and this is me because I jumped on my notes, but the job they try to do at the meatpacking plant is a pretty ballsy move because it's happening in the middle of the day.
Yeah.
As opposed to, you know, as I'm watching this, thought you couldn't wait until 4:30 or 5 o'clock or 5:15, but to attempt to do it and then walk away, and just walk away regularly, kind of like Al Pacino, don't look, don't make eye contact, just move, don't run.
Drop the gun,
get the cannoli. But, and of course, it goes horribly wrong.
It does go horribly wrong. But see, if you think about it, like, that's us. We would be planners of things,
mm-hmm.
not her.
Nope.
She's only planning just enough. She has the idea, but then she wants to get it done. She's rushing to get it done. And it's, again, part of that urgency of this character, this chaos, and this just only ever acting on impulse, very poor impulse control. And so is that another thing that separates her from similar characters on the surface from movies of this type. They're waiting in the long grass. The other kinds of femme fatale, they're playing the long game. If you're Phyllis in Double Indemnity, if you're Maddie in Body Heat, but not our girl. she's getting after it just the moment she thinks of it. And so, yeah, you're right. It's strange and stupid and kind of really extra exciting because of that. And then the chase that you mentioned, I think is really interesting because atmospherically, as you said, there's smoke and lots of foliage. So we wind up in this, it almost reads like a bayou kind of a thing.
Yeah,
I mean,
a little bit.
It's definitely not that because we're in L.A., but we have a lot of mist and fog. And
it's Creedence Clearwater Revival.
Okay. and we're picking our way through this, and it's really it's a strange, almost like a horror movie atmosphere that we wind up in, where everything goes to hell and sort of where the movie ends. It's just another odd choice that sets it apart. Another choice that is visually so interesting, again, with someone who is working on tight budgets and cranking out the movies by using all of the, the sort of plants, the sort of marshy land area kind of thing, and all of the mist and fog. Well, because that obscures a lot, you could use a much smaller space. Like, it makes sense sort of from a financial standpoint. You know, you don't have to have a chase through many streets or lots of locations that would be expensive. You're kind of faking it out with this, but then it also really works as an audience member. I love that kind of clever. I love people who don't have a big budget, whether they're directors or the designers, that kind of thing. I love it when you can sort of sense the economies of scale.
Yep.
And where they were using their brains to create something for you rather than just throwing money at the problem.
Mm-hmm.
I find that exciting. The whole movie is very exciting, and I wish more people would watch it. I wish more people would think of the character of Laurie hand in hand with thinking of other great femme fatale of the era. It's a really fun new way to see John Dahl after
yeah.
Rope. They'd actually be a good double feature.
God,
two couples that commit murder.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
He's a real switch. So,
yep.
It's pretty great.
Have you not been? Of course, we're past March, but have you not been asked to do the Femme Fatale tournament, like the NCAA basketball tournament?
No,
I'm sure somebody's done that somewhere. So now she's going to jot down 64 or 38 or whatever. So you can make a tournament bracket there for
yeah.
next year.
Oh gosh. Yeah. And I,
that's tough.
Hard pressed to pick a favorite.
Exactly.
Yeah, they're all my favorite. They're all
yes.
perfect.
They're just like your, these are your children.
They are my children. These are my sisters. I do have to say that the one that springs to mind, she may not be a favorite overall, but I like the way Mattie ended in Body Heat.
Yeah.
Because she won.
Yep.
You know? And that was something that you couldn't do back in the day because it would go against code because bad deeds have to be punished. But it was the 80s, so Maddie won.
So let me ask, have you seen the most recent Nightmare Alley?
Oh, yes, of course.
So for me, I was going to get your thoughts on it. For me, it was, I explained to some folks, I'm okay with both films existing in the same universe. You just have to know that, and I love Guillermo del Toro, his film looks great. It's longer. I don't think the dialogue is as snappy, but you have a lot of good people in it, and he got the original ending.
Yes. Yes. They're apples and oranges.
Yeah. Yep.
The original one is such a favorite movie of mine that I ate up my VHS copy of it. And then at one point had recorded it on a DVR, and then I transferred it to a DVD.
Jeez.
Because I can't be without the original Nightmare Alley. I love that one so much. It is wonderful and terrifying and just a beautiful movie. And I also am a fan of Guillermo. And the new one to me, again, it's apples and oranges. They're like different, you know, sort of different universes.
Mm-hmm.
It looks so luscious and amazing. It is the world that I want to live in. I never want to be anywhere else. I just want to live in that world all the time. It's phenomenal. And it is great that we were able to get the ending that was intended from the original Nightmare Alley. That's exciting. I do think it was a little bit draggy. I do think that it didn't have – I would absolutely agree about the snappy dialogue situation. It is more one that I watch just to sort of feel like I'm floating in a bath of gorgeous – you know, Art Deco, carnival situations, and
I think it's
most near and dear to my heart.
I think it's Taffy DeVee's altered states.
Mm-hmm.
If we're gonna go back to
unquestionably, yeah.
So just a reminder,
good stuff.
Just a reminder, friends. Gun Crazy is a part of Warner Brothers Archive Collection Film Noir. This is all in one package, friends. Gun Crazy, Murder My Sweet, The Setup, and Out of the Past.
That's a good one.
That is a good
That's
one.
A good collection. That's four really solid movies there.
Yep. So you, that's
I think that's great.
Look for that. So now Taffeta, tell me what else you got going on in the universe. I know you are up to your elbows in Playboy magazines, and we appreciate that.
I'm literally up to my elbows in Playboy magazines. I do a podcast with Mr. Mike Mandelbilt, who is now officially the best bartender in Chicago, according to the Chicago Reader and people there. And we do the hard work of reading old Playboy magazines and then talking about it. It's actually really a lot of fun. I love doing it. I mean, the homework for that podcast.
Oh my God.
The most fun ever.
Yeah.
You know? I can't believe it. So that's a really good time. I am writing a book called Bookstore Confidential about my days as the event lady at Borders in the Midwest. So doing that, I do the occasional guest spots like this one, and certainly I'm always looking for more. And right around the corner, I have something new, which is really exciting to me. There's a new magazine coming out called All the Deets, and it is a woman's magazine and website, as they say in their little tagline, by weird girls for weird girls. And I'm a weird girl. And I've got a couple of pieces in their premiere issue. And after that, I am going to have a regularly appearing style column in every issue.
All right.
So, weird girl fashion. So I'm really looking forward to that. So dabbling in lots of things.
Of course. Well, I have to let you know, during the early stages of lockdown, we were cleaning out my in-laws' old place, and I came across a box of Playboys. I need to jot down the issues and let see if you need them or not. I'll get back to it. But what I wound up doing on the other program, on the Blues House Party, was playing songs by albums that were reviewed in the music column.
These are remember that. Yeah,
the late 80s. Yep, late 80s, early 90s. So, you know, there was like the James Brown box set and the Ray Charles box set, like Bonnie Raitt's big album, Nick of Time, if I remember right. But yeah, it was just all those to where I almost wanted to call the show. I was reading it for the reviews. So.
That's very good.
Yeah, so I think I just vaguely mentioned it from, you know, reviews from a magazine that you know of. And that's all there is to it. So anyway, I will send you that list and see if you have any that you could use for your collection. So we've mentioned those. Check out Golden Globus Theater, because I know you've done how many episodes of Golden Globus have you done?
Probably three or four.
Three or four.
Always a fun time.
Yep, always fun with that. I got to, if you can go, you can hear her talk about such things as Miami Vice and Chips. Or I talked about Miami Vice. You talked about Death Wish 5 and Chips.
I did.
And then, of course, you must remember this if you love long stream podcasts. And, yeah, the exotic 80s and the erotic 80s. I just finished the Bo Derek episode.
John Derek, man.
Thanks, John Derek. I mean, trust me, exactly. I'm a pig male, and I'm like, thanks. He's filmmaking.
So am I.
He's filmmaking Rod Stewart, you know, gets a new model every few years.
Oh yeah.
So, all right, yeah. And then you're on Twitter, of course, at Taffeta V. Is that right?
That's correct. On Twitter at Taffeta V, and my website is surprisingly taffetav.com.
Thanks, Moneypenny.
Thank you, Mr. Sosie.
It's good to have old friends on the show, although neither one of them have aged, and somehow I have. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Okay, friends, grab a pencil. Let's find out what you've been watching this week. And we start on Facebook with Dustin, who writes, George M., a TV movie from 1970, Bull Durham, Frida, and Black Klansman. Thank you, Dusty. Nick writes, Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. He saw Ambulance twice, 8 Million Ways to Die, Apollo 10 and a Half, A Space Age, Childhood, Topside, Barb and Star Go to Vista Del Mar, Moonshot, Transformers, RRR, and Nitrum. Thank you, Nick. Eric writes, Shang-Chi and the Eternals. Lou Harry writes, Take Me Out to the Ball Game and The Bubble, as well as Chicago. Devin writes, Wreck-It Ralph and Ralph Breaks the Internet. Erica writes, Just last night we watched a really good political comedy from 1932 called Dark Horse, starring Warren Williams and Betty Davis. 90 years old and still very pertinent, and it's on HBO Max. Thank you, Chief. Abdul writes, Morbius and deemed it blah. Yeah, that's okay, buddy. Doug writes, Min and Bill, 1930 film. Notorious, Cocoon, and Rent. Missy writes, The House That Jack Built, The Visiting of Sidney Hall, Tesla, and Bernie. You've seen that before, Missy, haven't you? I think we've talked about Bernie. Stephen writes, The National Theater live production of The Book of Dust, La Belle Sauvage. Thank you, Stephen. Andrea writes, Hamilton and God of Carnage. There you go. James writes, Godard's First Name, Carmen, and The Aristocrats. And I'm going to finish up with The Aristocrats, thoughts on The Aristocrats, at the end of the show, James. Thank you. Kurt writes, The French Dispatch. Catherine writes, Dune. Bill writes, The Documentary, 4 Days in November. Patty writes, this is Patty Glenn, I got to get her on the show again. Greenlight, Star Wars, The Empire Strikes Back, Star Wars, The Force Awakens, and Footsteps in the Dark. Dee Dee, Drinks with Dee Dee, that podcast, writes, Goodfellas. Then this week was the birthday of Paul Sorvino, so happy birthday, Paul. Carrie writes, Cactus Flower and Clute. There's a double feature. Chrissy writes, all Percy Jackson book fans turned into the Adam Project on Netflix to see if young Walter Scobel is worthy of playing Percy in the new Disney Plus series. The movie jumped to the fourth most watched in Netflix history. Cool. Opinion. Scobel is perfect, all caps, for the part. Joshua writes, Long Shot, Windfall, and Magnum Force. Thank you, Josh. Carrie writes, Mystery Alaska, again, and The Bubble. Bonnie writes, All the Old Knives, Pimpernel Smith, Safety Last, The Great Race, and Bull Durham. Molly writes, by the way, happy birthday, Molly, kick or death. In an unintentional theme, Turning Red, Red, Red 2, and Army of Thieves. Eric writes a rollicking little family comedy called August Osage County. Thank you, Eric. Eat the fish. Jim writes The Batman. Taylor writes Red, Gigi, and Stagecoach. Sam writes Sonic the Hedgehog 2, There's Someone Hiding in Your House, and The Bye-Bye Man. Hey, Dougie. Eric writes Kurt Vonnegut, Unstuck in Time, and two more versions of Touch of Evil, the preview version and Walter Murch's reconstructed version. Can't help wondering what Orson would have thought of the latter. Yeah, I went through that box set as well. Don't forget, there is a three-disc collection of Touch of Evil put out by Kino Lorber on Blu-ray. So, yeah, go check that out. Britt writes Pixels. Ed writes The Long Goodbye. Dave writes Godless and The Irishman. Matthew writes Little Big Man, The Bombardment, and Porky's. Doug writes, I finally watched The Road. I also finally watched Idiocracy because I'm versatile. Thank you, Doug. Daniel writes Bad Education, One Shoe Makes It Murder, The French Dispatch, the Benjamin Franklin documentary put out by Ken Burns, Viva Las Vegas, Me and My Shadows, Please Don't Eat the Daisies, Drive My Car, Life Begins for Andy Hardy, Fort Apache, The Bronx, Clute, and King Richard. Joanne writes, and As They Made Us. Magnus writes, The Ghost and Mrs. Muir. Molly writes, Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. Jed writes, Finally watched Dr. Sleep and absolutely loved it. From writing, directing, and acting, a solid film through and through. Also watched Lincoln for a third time. Really enjoyed it. Wish it could have been a miniseries that went further back in his life. Spielberg and Daniel Day-Lewis don't do miniseries, at least not yet. So thank you, Jed. Michelle writes Pirates of the Caribbean, Curse of the Black Pearl, as well as the film Siege. Kurt writes Waitress and pointed out that the stage musical played at IU back in the fall, and Easter Parade for our second Sunday musical. Thank you, Kurt. Lee writes Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. Good to see people watching that, or hearing people watching that, reading people are watching that. Joe writes Sharps Rifles. Kevin writes Inside Llewyn Davis and Ghostlight. Robert Muggy writes Parallel Mothers, Diva, All the Old Knives, Always Fair Weather, and three early John Ford sound films starring Will Rogers, Judge Priest, Steamboat Round the Bend, and The Wonderful Dr. Bull, which he watched twice. Thank you, Robert. Jamie writes Turning Red. David writes Till the Wheels Fall Off, a Tony Hawk documentary, The Lost City, and finish season 4 of The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. Yeah, David, we finished that a while back and hoping for 5. Lisa writes Escape from Alcatraz. Jay writes, we saw Ambulance. Not a big action movie fan, but this one was pretty good. Couple things. Michael Bay definitely has a style. Thank you, Jay. Hot take. And he really likes the new drones he used in the movie. Yeah, there's a lot of filmmakers. Once they get to use drones, they're excited. They were actually pretty cool the way he shot a lot of the action. Also, Jake Gyllenhaal plays a very convincing off-balance psychopath. Yep. I'm with you on that one, Jay. I totally get that. If you want to see more unhinged Jake Gyllenhaal, look for the film Nightcrawler. Anyway, thank you, Jay. Thor writes, Everything, Everywhere, All at Once is the best film I have seen in a long time. That's right, Thor. You are correct, sir. Aaron writes, Nobody. Melissa writes, All the Old Knives. And last week, Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. Andy writes, Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. Jujutsu Kaisen, Ambulance. The Evil Dead, Evil Dead 2, Army of Darkness, and The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent. That is tonight. That's a new Nicolas Cage film as Nicolas Cage. Tracy writes King Richard, Best in Show, and Curious George. Keith writes The Life and Times of Judge Roy Bean, The Drowning Pool, The Last Emperor, All the Old Knives, and The Batman. Joan writes Ford versus Ferrari, and it was outstanding. Paula writes the 1993 Much Ado About Nothing. Michael writes Death on the Nile, A View to a Kill, All the Old Knives, The Fatal Hour, and Blood on the Sun. T-Metz writes Deadpool 2. Gary writes Cooties, The Outfit, Lost Skeleton of Cadavra, The Ugly Truth, A Hard Day's Night, Perfect Blue, Fighting with My Family, Shark Tale, The Tomorrow War, Dirty Duck, Solo, Ride Lonesome, Blanche, Evil Dead 2, That's Sexploitation, Fender Bender, and More Than Roberts. Meredith writes So Cold the River. Kara writes Dune and Inglourious Bastards. Tom writes The New Death on the Nile. Todd writes Hellhole, An Englishman in New York, Dracula Has Risen from the Grave, The Devil Rides Out, and The Horror of Dracula. David writes Ride or Die, House of Hummingbird, and Stripes. Barry writes The Green Knight. And finally, Abby writes Kill Bill Volume 1 and Little Miss Sunshine. Thank you, gang. And there you go, friends. That's what you've been watching. So hopefully you've been able to watch some good movies that are new, or at least new to you, as well as falling back on old favorites. I appreciate it. Friends, some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. There's plenty out there. And I appreciate everybody's input and output here with Film Sociology. I want to end the show with a little, not an audio tribute to Gilbert Gottfried, but I do want to mention, yes, the great comic and podcaster and voiceover artist. Never forget that. But I want to mention the three great contributions to cinema done by Gilbert Gottfried. There's three. First one, obviously, Aladdin as the voice of Iago. That just, the fact that he got to do that, and I was in college, when that came out, and it fit perfect. It just fit perfectly. That's the first. The second, I definitely can't share, and it wasn't made for film, it was, but his version of The Aristocrats. So the backstory, if you get a chance, look at the documentary The Aristocrats. It's one of the funniest things. If you're into dirty jokes, man, this is right up your alley. But it's a documentary about the history of this very – it was an inside dirty joke among comics. And then when a roast for Hugh Hefner – it was on Comedy Central, I believe – started to look like it was going to go down a bad path. Because there was it briefly addresses the concept of too soon when it comes to dark humor, and Gilbert Gottfried saved the day by going up on the podium and doing his version of The Aristocrats, and that's also the climax of the documentary The Aristocrats. The third great contribution to cinema, and this is the one that kind of hits hardest for me. If you get a chance, there is a lovely 2016 documentary called Life Animated, and it's about a guy named Owen Suskind who was diagnosed with autism at the age of 3 and was silent in his younger years, and he finally opened up with animated films, specifically the ones done by Walt Disney. And we get to follow him making the transition from living in a facility to living on his own, and he's going to have a girlfriend, and we get the parent story. It's a lovely film, and it's a lovely documentary, one that we as a family got to watch a few times. But the great moment is there's a group of friends of Owen's who all have autism, and they all get together to watch and act out scenes from Disney cartoons. And in the documentary, the facility is able to get Jonathan Freeman. He was the voice of Jafar in Aladdin, and they were able to bring him in to meet and greet with the members of the facility and Owen. And of course, then Owen gets to do Iago with Jonathan, which is already a lovely moment, and I've already got a big lump in my throat. And then out of nowhere, Gilbert Gottfried shows up and, you know, kind of jumps into the fun. It's a, like I said, a moment I didn't see coming, because I thought, okay, one great voice actor is enough. But then the second one shows up. So, you know, say what you will about Gottfried as a comic, and he was great. You should never forget that. Get past the voice. That's your problem. But yeah, probably my favorite movie moment involving Gilbert Gottfried was just that little bitty moment in Life Animated. So look for it when you're looking for wonderful documentaries. So there you go. Salute to you, Gilbert. Thank you. So, yes, and for everybody else, until next time, keep watching good movies and take care, everybody. You're listening to the Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What kind of parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!